Good morning, 21st century world. This is Radio Richard Ireland, coming to you from within the soundproofless studio of life itself.
Tall and tan and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, each one she passes goes, ah.
Moça do corpo dourado, do sol de Ipanema, o seu balançado é mais que um poema, é a coisa mais linda que eu já vi passar.
But I watch her so sadly. I smile, but she doesn't see.
Por causa do amor.
I mean, she just doesn't see.
Nem olha pra mim.
She doesn't see me.
The other day I saw three seagulls flying high in the sky. They seem to be heading back towards the sea. It is interesting why they come so far inland, seeing that we are some 22 kilometers, 14 miles or so from the sea. Their flight is beautiful to watch, so graceful and effortless. Would that we would use our mind like this. I met a young elderly lady the other day, and I asked her how life was treating her. Ah, she said, the weather is desperate. I feel like emigrating, honestly. And I asked her, would she be coming back again? Oh, of course I would, when the weather would be better, when it would be good again, of course. I wonder in how many countries around the world have the people that way of thinking about the weather. I remember at the end of the previous century, when living in the Arabian lands, that come the summer, there would be a mass exodus among the rich, especially off to cooler places such as Switzerland, to avoid the oppressive summer heat. Maybe theirs is a similar attitude to the lady I met who wanted to get out of the Irish weather for a bit. In today's broadcast, we're going to learn about an Armenian UNESCO World Heritage Site, and then I will conclude with a poem. Today's UNESCO World Heritage Site is to be found in Armenia. I'm not going to be able to pronounce all the words, so please bear with me. The name, place names. The monastery of Gerhard and the upper Azad Valley contains a number of churches and tombs, most of them cut into the living rock, which illustrate Armenian medieval architecture at its highest point. The complex of medieval buildings is set into a landscape of great natural beauty. At the entrance to the Azad Valley, high cliffs from the northern side surround the complex, while the defensive wall encircles the rest. The monuments included in the property are dated from the 4th to the 13th century. At the early period, the monastery was called the Monastery in the Cave because of its rock-cut construction. The monastery was founded, according to tradition, by St. Gregory the Illuminator, and was built following the adoption of Christianity as a state religion in Armenia, beginning around the 4th century AD. The main architectural complex was completed in the 13th century AD and consists of the cathedral, the adjacent narthex, eastern and western rock-cut churches, the family tomb of Prussian princes, Papas and Rukas tomb chapel, as well as various cells and numerous rock-cut cross stones. The main church is in the classical Armenian form, an equal armed cross inscribed in a square in plan and covered with a dome on a square base, linked with the base by vaulting. The east arm of the cross terminates in an apse, and the remainder being square. In the corners are small barrel-vaulted two-story chapels. On the internal walls there are many inscriptions recording donations. The masonry of the external walls is particularly finely finished and fitted. An entrance hall links it with the first rock-cut church. The first rock-cut church was built before 1250, entirely dug into the rock, and on an equal-armed cruciform plan. To the east, a roughly square chamber cut into the rock was one of the princely tombs of the Prussian dynasty. This gives access to the second rock-cut church built in 1283. The second, reached by an external staircase, contains the tombs of the princes Merrick and Grigor. A defensive wall encircled the monastery complex in the 12th and 13th centuries. Most of the monks lived in cells excavated into the rock face outside the main defensive wall, which have been preserved along with some simple oratories. Holy Mother of God Chapel is the most ancient preserved monument outside the ramparts and is located on the western side. It is partially hewed in the rock. There are engraved inscriptions on the walls, the earliest of which date back to 1177 and 1181 AD. Residential and economic constructions were built later in the 17th century. The monastery of Gaghart is a renowned ecclesiastical and cultural center of medieval Armenia, where a school, scriptorium, library, and many rock-cut dwelling cells for clergymen could be found in addition to the religious constructions. Historians who lived and worked there in the 13th century contributed to the development of the Armenian manuscript art. It was also renowned for the relics housed there. The most celebrated of these was the spear, which had wounded Christ on the cross and was allegedly brought there by the Apostle Thaddeus, from which comes its present name, the Monastery of the Spear. The spear was kept in the monastery for 500 years. Relics of the Apostles Andrew and John were donated in the 12th century, and pious visitors made numerous grants of land, money, and manuscripts over the succeeding centuries. If you'd like to read more about this cultural heritage in Armenia, come to the UNESCO.org website. Also, there are two other heritage sites in Armenia. Today's poem is Osmandius by Percy Bysshe Shelley. I will first read about the possible meanings of the poem as a way of focusing our concentration. I'm using classicalpoets.org. In this winding story within a poem, Shelley paints for us the image of the ruins of a statue of ancient Egyptian king Osmandius, who is today commonly known as Ramesses II, and he would have lived about 1300 BC. This king is still regarded as the greatest and most powerful Egyptian pharaoh. Yet all that's left of the statue are his legs, which tell us it was huge and impressive, the shattered head and snarling face, which tell us how tyrannical he was, and his inscribed quote hailing the magnificent structures that he built and that have been reduced to dust, which tells us they might not have been quite as magnificent as Osmandius imagined. The image of a dictator-like king, whose kingdom is no more, creates a palpable story. But beyond that, there is a perennial lesson about the inescapable and destructive forces of time, history, and nature. Success, fame, power, money, health, and prosperity can only last so long before fading into lone and level sands. There are yet more layers of meaning here that elevate this into one of the greatest poems. In terms of lost civilizations that show the ephemeralness of human pursuits, There is no better example than the Egyptians, who we associated with such dazzling monuments as the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid at Giza that stands far taller than the Statue of Liberty, yet who completely lost their spectacular language, culture, and civilization. If the forces of time, history, and nature can take down the Egyptian civilization, it begs the question, who's next? Additionally, Osmandius is believed to have been the villainous pharaoh who enslaved the ancient Hebrews and from whom Moses led the Exodus. If all ordinary pursuits such as power and fame are but dust, what remains, the poem suggests, are spirituality and morality, embodied by the ancient Hebrew faith. If you don't have those, then, in the long run, you are a colossal wreck. Thus the perfectly composed scene itself, the Egyptian imagery, and the biblical backstory convey a perennial message and make this a great poem. Osmandius by Percy Bysshe Shelley. I met a traveller from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read which yet survive, stamped in on these lifeless things. The hand that mocked them and the heart that fled, and on the pedestal these words appear. My name is Osmandius, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. All right, I will leave it at that for today. Wait patiently for things you are looking for. A good way of doing that, I find, is to bring to mind things nearer in time to you that you can be looking forward to. For instance, when you wake up in the morning, look forward to having breakfast. Look forward to doing something at work, such as starting your computer and setting up your desk for the day, calling your beloved at lunch hour, driving home in the afternoon or evening, having dinner with your beloved or your family, or even with yourself in the company of your pets, or watching something on television, and doing some reading, perhaps before you go to sleep. The idea here being, and it works well for me, is to have things you look forward to in the meantime, while you are looking forward to some big event that could be happening in a few weeks or a few months. Enjoying the near helps you comfortably reach the far. I will close out with some nice music, so take good care of yourself. Slána gospodnacht lat.
Would you like to learn to tango, Donna?
Right now?
I'm offering you my services, free of charge. What do you say?
I think I'd be a little afraid.
Of what?
Afraid of making a mistake.
No mistakes in the tango, Donna. Not like life. Simple. That's what makes the tango so great. If you make a mistake, get all tangled up. Just tango on. Why don't you try it? We try it?
All right, I'll give it a try.
Hold me down, son. Some coordinates here, sir.
The floor's about 20 by 30, and you're at the long end. There's some tables on the outside, and the band's on the right.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.